Welcome to the Sinister Sisters podcast. I'm Lauren.
I'm Felicia.
We're best friends.
And we like spooky stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, can I see my shirt?
Oh, my God.
An Elvira t-shirt for our spooky episode.
Well, I was going to say, I think this episode's going to come out in September.
Oh.
So does that count as fall?
Yes, let's call it fall. I'm sure it'll still be 100 degrees in Texas, but let's call it fall.
It's fall. It's spooky season now.
Yeah.
It can be spooky season girl time now.
Yeah,
I think it's actually going to be the day after my birthday. I'll be 30.
No. That's so beautiful. It's so weird to me you're not 30 because I'm 30. So I expect you to follow suit and also be 30.
You know what? I'm going to be 29 for the rest of my life, actually.
I will say.
It feels scary. No?
It's funny. It feels that way, but I swear 30 is amazing. Like, as soon as I turned 30, I was like, wow, I feel like really good about myself.
I love that.
I think, I don't know. There's like a confidence with like being able to look on a decade of your life that you were an adult and be like, oh, I've accomplished things and I've done things with my life. And yeah, it feels good. So I think, I don't know. I think it's good.
I love that. Okay. I'm gonna embrace it.
Good.
30. 30 feels good for Felicia, so it'll feel good for me.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Do you have any recommendations?
Just one that I'm not even done watching yet, but did you watch the Netflix true crime miniseries, I Just Killed My Dad?
No, but it keeps being offered to me.
Holy bananas, Lauren. It is so crazy. It's a good one. It's a really good one. There's only three episodes. I'm just finished the second one. And yeah, there's like a lot of twists and turns. And it's interesting because they talk about like how the media covered the case of this murder. And how just like nobody had all the information to start with, and it took a long time for all the information to come together of why this kid killed his dad. And it's pretty wild. So that's wow. I'm not done yet, but I can already tell you it's worth watching.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm very excited. I have not watched it. I think now I've gotten to the point where, yeah, there's like so much true crime documentary, so I need someone to be like, this is a good one.
I usually skip most of them now because I'm like, it's all the same.
Yeah, it does. It feels unique.
It's by the same filmmakers that did Abducted in Plain Sight, which was another like twisty turning one.
Oh yeah.
If you remember that one.
I did like that one. I did like that one. Okay, cool. Well, I'll check that out. I was trying to think of things. We have been in a big binging. Were your family Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle people?
Oh,
or no?
Oh, for sure. I grew up with two older brothers, so
yeah,
that's how it had to be. But so those original movies were everything to us.
Yes, I was just gonna say we've been rewatching. So we saw the new animated one that came out, which was great, very cute.
Oh, good. Okay, nice.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. But honestly, it left me being like, I want to go home and watch the 90s ones.
Yes. So good.
So we've been showing them to Willow. And I forgot like the first 90s like guys in the suits Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie is actually like very dark. Like it's kind of intense.
Oh. Is it? I kind of forget.
They're like much less wisecracking. And honestly, there's like a lot of fighting. Of course, like it's helpful, like James knows a lot about the like behind the scenes he was telling me, but like so for the second one they were like, okay, now we need to like be sillier, so the second one is like so much more like jokes
for kids
and, yes, for kids and like it's actually hysterical because you know like Leonardo has like two swords on his back and he like doesn't use them at all in the second one, like he's just punching people like instead of like using his swords, because I think people were like, this is too intense.
It's too violent.
It's too violent. So he doesn't. But our joke that we make every single time we watch them, and he like literally got up as I said it, is we really think that Rufus looks like Splinter.
Oh my God. Rufus looks exactly like Splinter.
Right?
Oh my God. That is so good.
Huge missed opportunity by not naming him Splinter.
Post a side by side on Instagram, Lauren. You have to.
I will, because it's iconic. Like, I like, yeah. like he showed up on the screen and I was like, that is Rufus.
Oh my God. That's so cute. I love that.
Also, something about like Rufus's expressions feel very Splinter. I don't know why. But he's it's wise, been a really but fun.
Judgy.
Exactly. He does like side eye better than anyone. But anyway, my little scruffy boy. But I think that's pretty much all I have to recommend this week.
That's great. I love it. What are you covering this week? I actually don't know.
Yes. I am covering a witch or a
oh, thank God.
Hypothetical witch. We haven't done one in a while.
Yeah.
So I'm covering Lilias Addy. So she was a Scottish woman and she lived in the coastal village of Torryburn, Fife in Scotland. And I wish any of our names in America were as cool as locations in Scotland.
Yeah.
Torryburn, I just like a lot. But so I found this story on TikTok. Somebody like had shared a basically like I think in the end I talk about like she has a like a water grave. Yes. So she's like under a sandstone slab that like the ocean comes over, and it's the only like example of a sea like burial to prevent witches from coming back. So
whoa.
I thought that was really cool. So she, the woman, in 1704 was held in prison for the crime of practicing witchcraft, and her story was found in the 1704 Kirk session minutes, which is basically just like the records of like church court at that time. Which like I just always think of that scene. I think it's Sweeney Todd maybe, or like I think it is Sweeney Todd where like there's what? That little boy that like Judge Turpin is like, you shall hang by the neck, and like
oh yeah
hits
yeah
the gavel, and it's just like flashes that little boy. That's like my idea of church court at the time. Yeah. So there was an illness that was spreading around the town, and it resulted in like a brief but intense period of witch hunting. I'm not going to go into – I feel like we've covered so many times like all the periods of witch hunting in England or Scotland or Europe. there are lots of like kind of pop-up times of witch hunting. And this time a woman named Jean Bizet accused Lilias of witchcraft, proclaiming, "Beware lest Lilias Addy come upon you and your child." Which also, like, what a crazy time that women were just like, she's a witch.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Can't imagine. So Lilias was arrested just based on that one woman yelling at her. And she was over 60 years old at the time, which at that time was old. So she was taken to the local minister, Reverend Alan Logan, to answer to the crime of witchcraft. She was held for over a month and interrogated very roughly day after day, until she finally confessed. Seems like a little bit of that sad classic, like someone was, you know, roughed around until they confessed to something that probably wasn't true.
Yep.
Happens a lot. But
still happening.
Yes, still happening. But her confession explained that she had seen the devil wearing a hat when he visited her in a cornfield at sunset the very first time they met.
A cornfield. Yeah. Ooh, that's such a great image. It's very – what's
Scarecrow.
That?
Scarecrow. Scarecrow demon.
No, remember not Maxine?
Oh, yeah.
Not yet.
Pearl.
Pearl. Oh, my God. That's so – it's giving Pearl.
It's giving Pearl. It is giving Pearl, the Scarecrow. So, yes, devil came to her in a cornfield. Under the minister's questioning, she described how she had slept with the devil – and he made her renounce her baptism. She said he had cold, pale skin and cloven hoofed feet like a cow. It is just like, I just will always until the day I die be like, okay, if the devil is not real, like why do we have the same imagery so many different places and same like descriptions? And how wild that just everybody be sleeping with the devil. But
yeah,
after that first how meeting, wild. I know. After that first meeting, the devil would come to her house like a shadow, she said. So she had gone to meetings and cavorted with the devil, with other witches. I will say on the pro Lilia side, she didn't name any other women as witches.
Hey, so, nice.
Yeah. Shouldn't take anyone like, down
I
with
her. I slept with the devil, but I ain't no snitch.
Yeah, exactly. But very sadly, this is like the worst part of the story is that she died before the investigation was concluded. So
how?
I think they just roughed her up so much in trying to get her to confess. And she was over 6-year-old woman and she died. Very sad. Oh my God,
that's horrible.
Yes. So in 2014, due to interest in Lilias' story, there was a BBC broadcaster, Dr. Louise Yeoman, and Douglas Spears, who is an archaeologist at Fife Council, who they kind of like started this search for Lilias' burial site because people weren't really sure where it was. Like, we had the documentation from the court, like the church court that I said, but nobody knew where her grave was. So using 19th century historical documents, they found a seaweed-covered slab of stone exactly where the documents described, which wow. I think is so cool that just like in 2014, they were like, we're going to find where this witch's burial yeah. ground is. So and they cool. did. So in a group of rocks near the Tory Burn Railway Bridge, there lay, I think this quote is just from the broadcast story about it, but lay the great stone doorstep that lies over the rifled grave of Lily Edie. Oh, I guess it must be Edie is how you pronounce it. It's spelled A-D-I-E, but maybe it's I'm like in a Scottish accent maybe. Anyway, and a rock with the remains of an iron ring. So she'd been buried, as I said, on the beach at Tory Burn Bay. It was just a humble wooden box under this sandstone slab, and it was like between the low and high tide marks so that the ocean would like wash over her grave. And the hulking half-ton stone that was over her grave was, you know, as I said, like they were worried that, you know, the devil might bring her back to life. And so they made sure there was a big stone over her grave. And as I said, this is the only example of a sea interment of an accused witch in Scotland. So maybe not anywhere, but in Scotland, this is the only time that they used the ocean in that way. So this is also really sad or just interesting. But so her remains were actually dug up by an antique collecting grave or by antique collecting grave robbers in 1852. No. Yes. So at that time, it was reported that the coffin was 6 feet by 6 inches. And her thigh bones were found to be comparable with like a 6-foot-tall man. So I think she was a very tall woman, especially at that time.
Yeah.
So she still had most of her teeth when they found her body in 1852, which also is wild to me. And they were still very white. So I'm like, she was like a 6-foot-tall woman who had like very white, impressive teeth. Which I'm like, I don't know if that was just hygiene and people were like weirded out by it or whatever. But
she had good hygiene and they said, you're a witch.
Something's not right. Your teeth are too white.
Oh my God.
But the skull was in the private museum of Dunfermline. I don't know what that word is. I'm assuming it's a location. Antiquarian.
That Joseph really sounded Neil like you were saying Patton. From The Office.
Yeah, Dunder right. Mifflin. Dunder Mifflin. It's Dunfermline. So basically, it was in a private museum. Then it was exhibited to a medical association in 1884. And it's eventually the skull was held at the Museum of the University of St. Andrews, but it has since disappeared.
Jump scare. That's crazy.
Jump scare. So the skull was exhibited. I don't know what I'm saying, in 1938 at the Empire Exhibition in Glasgow, and that's its last known location.
Wow.
So we don't know where her skull is, but that can't be good. I
wonder if a witch took it to do something with. I don't know what.
It feels like it could be possible. So her coffin was actually made into several items, including a walking stick that someone made from the wood of her coffin. And it has a silver band near the handle that's engraved with Lilias Addy 1704. That was donated to a museum in 1927 as well. And then in 1904, 200 years after her death, photographs were taken of her remains, which are now held at the National Library of Scotland. So using those photographs, they did, this is crazy, in 2017, a doctor, Dr. Christopher Wren, or maybe Ryan, and a team of forensic artists at the Center for Anatomy and Human Identification at the University of Dundee constructed Dundee. This is like a Dunder Mifflin episode. But they constructed this 3D virtual model that looks like what she could have looked like at the time.
Wow. I love so that people are putting in the that. Time to do this.
Just like for a random woman in, what did I say? In 1704, Scotland.
I love it.
So I will share the picture of her recreated face, which is just fun. What else do I want to say? Okay, so I'm going to read a quote from the BBC broadcaster that I mentioned. Yes, her name is Louise Yeoman. So she specializes in Scottish witch trials, and she said, quote, "I think she was a very clever and inventive person. The point of the interrogation and its cruelties was to get names. Lilia said that she couldn't give the names of the other women and at the witches' gatherings, as they were masked like gentlewomen. She only gave names which are already known and kept up coming with good reasons for not identifying the other women, for not identifying other women for this horrendous treatment, despite the fact that it would probably mean there was no let up for her. It's sad to think her neighbors expected some terrifying monster when she was actually an innocent person who suffered terribly. The only thing that's monstrous here is a miscarriage of justice," which I don't think is a surprise to us. Like, I do think a lot of people at the time of the witch trials obviously, like, did nothing wrong, were accused of witchcraft and were murdered or killed horribly. And then I'll just add, like, one little last thing. So on August 31st, 2019, 315 years after she died, they had a memorial service in Torryburn, and they laid a wreath at the site of her grave to raise awareness of the persecution during those witchcraft panics. And they've also made plans for a permanent memorial at Torryburn dedicated to Lilias and other women who were persecuted across Scotland, which I just love. I'm like, all these people just, you know, speaking up for her. Yes. Yeah. But yes, that's Lilias, who I think shall go down in history for not only having the water grave, but also for not naming any other women.
That's amazing. And for being six foot. Yes. I love that. I love
and
that.
And for being 6 foot.
That's amazing. An
icon with white teeth.
With white teeth. Yeah. That is, like, cool. And that sounds like such a, like, I don't know, like a Scottish image to me of, like, a sea grave and, like, the tide coming up and over it. It's just, like, something so, like, majestic about that image. But that's awesome. Good job.
Amazing. Thank you.
All right. And now I'm going to – so Lauren and I are both getting married. So today I'm going to cover – I was just going to do the history of white wedding dresses, but it did take me to, like, a couple of other places as well. Okay, so here I go. I don't know about you, but I had always thought white wedding dresses were about being a virgin.
Yes, like that's, and, like, purity.
Yeah. Like, that's always the association I had with that. But I will say this. So that version of the white wedding dress is societal, and I'm going to talk about the history of that, but it's also, like, a mix of fashion and religious symbolism that so white in, like, the Catholic Church means, like, innocence, purity, whatever. And, like, for example, like, in like, little girls wear white for their first communion as well. So it's kind of always been a symbol of that. But that's not the history of women wearing white wedding dresses is not actually that old and doesn't date back in the same way of, like, the Catholic Church. Like, it's not as connected as I thought it was.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah, here I go. So back in the day, women, and from, like, ancient Roman times up until basically the Victorian era, women just wore whatever their nicest dress was. So
I feel like I do sort of knew, I did kind of know.
Like, it wasn't necessarily white. It was like, yes, like maybe if you were very high class and could afford to wear white, which would have been like basically impossible to clean and delicate and whatever, sure. But like, it wasn't, it was really just whatever your like Sunday best was, is what you would wear. And it also wasn't an item of clothing that would never be worn again. It was like whatever your nice dress is that you would probably wear at other nice things later.
That's
so
crazy.
It just it wasn't the same thing. And the person that made it the iconic thing it is today was actually Queen Victoria. Yes, a la the Victorian era. But Queen Victoria, so she ruled the United Kingdom and Ireland from 1837 to 1901. So once again, by the way, not that old.
No.
Like, in my head, this had been going on since, you know, I don't know, the before, the
forever.
I don't know.
Since anyone got married ever.
Exactly. But no. So Queen Victoria, she inherited the throne when she was 18 years old, like queen, literally. And she married her first cousin, Prince Albert. But that was very normal at the time. And she like really loved him. Like, she freaking loved Prince Albert. She met him and was like, oh my God, I'm going to marry that guy. And she actually proposed to him, which I also thought was interesting, exciting.
Kind of fierce.
Kind of fierce, but apparently, like, my first thought was like, yeah, fierce feminist, you go. But it actually had to be that way because she was of a higher status, because she was the queen. So if you were of higher status at that time, in this level, you would have to propose to the person.
So
it's also like a contract.
We should have proposed to our fiancés.
That's the point of what we're talking about.
Just kidding.
But yeah, so she married him in 1840, and she wore this very fantastic white dress that I'll obviously post a picture of, but it's got like lace and the waist is cute and it's big and fabulous. And yeah, and she wears this beautiful long veil, and it really is this kind of like, when you look at that picture, you're like, oh, a classic wedding dress. And she was super influential on fashion while she was alive. Like, first of all, you know, her being like 18 when she got the throne, you know, she was queen while she was like kind of growing up and in like her, you know, I don't know.
Early.
People liked what she wore. she was a fashion icon. And also, yeah, not even just this. This is crazy too. But so she wore this white dress. So everybody else was like, I also am going to wear a white dress to my wedding. Like, it became like it spread through Europe. It came to the United States, and then it became like a worldwide thing. And she also, when her Prince Albert died, she wore black from the day he died until the end of her life. And so she was
grieving forever.
Yeah, but she also, like, her fashion influence, not only in weddings, but also in, like, mourning culture of, like, how wearing white to your wedding and wearing black to a funeral is, like, in Victoria, which I just was like, that's insane.
And recent.
Yeah, and she had some other things she was known for. She was like big on family values and like having like a close-knit family, became like a kind of Victorian ideal. And she was also, her reign was part of the height of the British Empire. So she was like this symbol of like power and like grandeur and global dominance.
Amazing.
So, I mean, people freaking love Queen Victoria. She also was huge into the arts, and you know, the art movement of that time is still kind of like iconic today. This is like Charles Dickens, and I feel like whenever we think of like I love movies that are set in like Victorian England. The vibes are gorge. And this is also like, this is nothing to do with Queen Victoria, but this is also like the age of the spiritualism and that stuff that we've talked about on this podcast before. But anyways, all right. So white dress thing. Yay. Okay. So we have that. A couple other things that I found while researching that I was just fascinated by. So your bouquet that you walk down the aisle with, like, what's that about? So first of all, there was a tradition in ancient England that after the marriage ceremony ended and she's walking away, the bride, other women would do something where they would try to grab the dress and rip pieces off.
Oh my God. Take it with them.
Yes, it sounds very brutal. And I think it sort of was. But getting a shred of the dress was meant to be like good luck and good fertility. Luck. Yeah. And so the bouquet actually came about as this thing that they would throw to distract the women while they ran away so they wouldn't get their dress shredded.
So that's why we throw bouquets?
The bouquet. Yeah.
Wow.
To distract the girls.
Wow.
Is that not insane?
Honestly, okay. I was like, when you first texted me this topic, I was like, huh, are there sinister elements? And I was like, I'm sure there are. And that is effing messed up.
Yeah, I forgot to say, this is not a very sinister topic. I forgot to say
You're
that.
Fine.
It's true.
The ripping of the dress is horrifying.
Yeah.
A bunch of women just grabbing you and pulling you.
Yes. And then we're going to go even further into some mysticism stuff here. I wish there was more spooky stuff associated with the dress thing itself. Like I had dreams of, you know, something cool and about that. But there's not really.
Me
but
too.
There is more about the bouquet and also the veil. So the bouquet also used to not be flowers. Queen Victoria did orange blossoms, and that also kind of helped people be like, oh, flowers, like that's such a cute idea, I'm gonna do that at my wedding. But before that, in the olden times, they used to do spices, so like basil and dill and thyme and like a bundle of spices you'd walk down the aisle with. And it had a couple of purposes. One, it was supposed to ward off bad luck and evil spirits. Okay, I don't know why. And then they were also supposed to ward off the BO because people were wearing a lot of clothing. And so the bride would come down the aisle and she wanted to smell good and apparently like a roasted chicken. And so she would come down and and then that would mask the smell of the BO that people were struggling with in the days before deodorant.
Yeah. It really is like staging a house or something.
Yeah, literally. And then so they would take her bouquet to the wedding party. And they would, the bride and groom, I guess is before the cake thing, but they would eat the spices, which was supposed to up their libido for the wedding night. I don't know how, but that's, I guess, what they thought. And it also was like a good luck thing. So
can you imagine if you just had to eat like a bunch of raw spices or herbs?
Yeah. Like what? But that was kind of, I mean, I think that's fun. Because that's the thing that I kind of like about weddings as the weird person I am, where I'm like, oh, I like the ritual aspect, the ritualistic aspects of weddings that just feel like a little like ancient to me that are so cool. But
totally.
But it's funny. Some of these things are not as ancient as I thought they were.
I know. I guess we're learning. Yeah, this is good education for us.
And then, okay, I'm going to hit two more things. The veil. So the veil has actually been around since like ancient Rome. And there's two sort of main reasons for the veil. One is to mask the bride from evil spirits until the marriage is complete. So it's like, once again, warding off evil, good luck,
just in
whatever.
Case she real quick like, gets possessed.
Evil? Yeah, like what is the evil? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Like I wanted to marry this woman, but maybe the devil will come into her body before she gets
before
the end of the altar.
Exactly. And then another reason, which is like a little bit dark, but so back in the day, arranged marriages were very, very common. And so there was a few wedding traditions that are kind of built to prevent the groom or the bride from running away from each other before they get married. So like, in case they don't like each other. So it's like they have to finish the union before they see each other. So for example, the bride coming down the aisle wearing a veil so he can't see what he's marrying or who he's marrying.
Wow.
What he's marrying.
What he's marrying.
It's brutal. And then also the tradition of not seeing the bride before the wedding is also like mixed in with that history of arranged marriages too.
Wow.
I know.
This is all fascinating.
I know. And then the other thing that's also from ancient Rome is the ring. So, yeah, and the ring, I mean, and I know this is still true now. I know it's like people want the wedding. Like, I wanted my engagement ring so bad. Like, it made me so happy. It still makes me so happy. But rings, when they were invented for marriages, were signifying the business transaction of marriage. It was so, and in ancient Rome, typically women had an iron ring they wore at home and a gold one they wore in public. I don't know why. That's just what it said. And
they wanted to be fancy when they went out.
I guess. And it really was like a symbol of you're contracted to a man already.
Wow.
And I know that it is true because, I mean, I was just telling Lauren a story about this where, like, a guy noticed my engagement ring. He was like, oh, you're engaged. And it's like, oh, right. Like, that is, like, part of this – yeah, part of this thing of, like, binding yourself to someone else and wearing this symbol in public so that everybody else knows that you are already with someone else. Like, it's so – it's just – I don't know. It's fascinating. And there, it's something like maybe a little dark about it when you think about it in the business transaction kind of way.
And also, did you notice that men don't have engagement rings? So like
we have
to be owned even though we're not technically married. But I mean, I love my engagement ring too, but I feel the same way.
But it's like, it's like, oh, you already have committed yourself to a contract. Even if your wedding is next year or whatever, like you're already contracted. And it's just
but not
like
the men.
No, they're not contracted until the wedding day, which is also part of the history of bachelor parties. So like the bachelor party is kind of like, oh, the last night to do whatever you want before you get married the next day. And whatever happens at the bachelor party stays the bachelor party or whatever. And women didn't actually get bachelorette parties until like the 60s.
Wow.
It's like a very recent thing. It used to just be a male thing. And women only got bridal showers, which were the women in your life coming and giving you gifts to make you a proper homemaker. While the men went and
messed up.
Yeah, did some crazy stuff. So it's just, you know, it's all misogynistic and dark and whatever. But and then diamond engagement rings, this is my last thing, didn't really come around until 1947 when a company that, of course, I didn't write down and forget the name of.
Oh, no.
which I'll try to Google really fast, started putting these ads about diamond engagement rings. And that's when they got really popular. It can't be Sears. This is a 1947 Sears catalog.
It could be.
But that's – so they the diamond engagement ring didn't actually get popular until like the last like 70 years or so.
Wow.
And before then it was more just like bands. But yeah. So that's a lot of things that I learned about the history and the ritual of wedding ceremonies.
I love that. That's all I feel like so interesting and so helpful. Yeah. And honestly, yeah, I'm surprised at how recent most of it is.
I know. It's crazy. And that's it for us this week, I think.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for listening. We hope you have some sweet, sweet nightmares.
Bye.